Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's big strong, play guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Ball is out.
Ball's
the Bengals have scooped
Ball's
it up.
Out.
Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown. Up in the air.
Oh,
AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
It's about to get rowdy here, but if you want to fight, get out of here. We about to tear off the roof.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I'm Paul Daner Jr., Richard Skinner here with Skinny. How about this? We survived our first road trip. And the Bengals got a win, and everyone can be happy, except we weren't real happy on Saturday, but it's really neither here nor there.
Well, you know what? We got back home. We're all good now. I feel back in a comfort zone, back in a comfortable place. But it was literally, for me, a planes, trains, and automobile trip just to get to M&T Bank Stadium on Sunday.
Hey, but you made it.
I did.
But you made it.
And good teamwork. You kind of picked up for me there in the pregame.
Oh, that's what we do.
We're all good.
We're all about a team here. We're together, Team Inquirer.
I'm not
working for the greater good.
As I was sitting in the Amtrak station in Washington, D.C. at 10:30 on Sunday morning, still trying to get to M&T Bank Stadium, I really didn't think I was going to make it.
There were questions.
Yes, there were.
There were definite questions. We will not go into the disastrous day of travel
or
non-travel for you.
Suffice to say, U.S. Airways supervisor lady, I commend you. You did a fine job with an angry customer.
Yeah.
So.
Sometimes it just comes out of you. Sometimes you get in a bad place.
I was in a bad place.
You're in a bad place, and that poor woman, she unfortunately
she took the brunt of it.
She took the brunt of it.
I would just say this until I said I need to speak to a supervisor, and I think she gladly handed me off.
Happily, but you made it, and we both made it to M&T Bank Stadium in lovely downtown Baltimore. Actually, it's a great weekend.
It's great.
There.
It is. It was beautiful. It is. It's such a great setup too, because Camden Yards is right there. M&T Bank Stadium's right there. Great crowds. I mean, they do a great job tailgating, kind of almost in a formal way. It is. It's a fun environment.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And our hotel was just a little 10-minute walk
right in the heart of it all.
Right next to Camden Yards, actually overlooked Camden Yards, which is pretty
sweet.
See,
right almost from dead center field, almost right to home plate. It was
unfortunate
beautiful.
There wasn't a home game.
I
would have enjoyed
cool.
to go to home game. But so we eventually made it to the stadium for the season opener, and the Bengals went to Baltimore and won. 23-16 was the final behind, well, as you would expect when they needed a play, number 18 was good.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, obviously Andy saw coverage. He saw a blitz come and check. You know, he saw what was there, which was one-on-one for A.J. Green. But when he went back and heaved it, because all I saw initially was the heave, right? And I kind of then looked downfield and I realized, oh, gosh, A.J.'s getting separation. It was almost like he decided, I'm going to throw this up. It's one-on-one. Even if he has to go get a jump ball, I'm going to let him try to make some kind of a play. The play was he actually got behind the defender is what it was.
And when you step up to the line and you look and A.J. Green has Chucky Brown.
Not spelled Chucky either.
No. And Darian Stewart over top as safety.
Darian didn't get there quite fast enough.
You pretty much know exactly where that ball is going. That was a matchup that we talked about. And when Ladarius Webb was inactive before the game, he was fighting a back injury that flared up on him. That forced Brown into play at corner. Now, Webb wasn't great for them in that game last year. He was actually almost double of every other player on the Ravens roster as far as Pro Football Focus performance, had plus 6.6.
Right.
And that was a big loss for them. And if they have him, I don't know that that play happens.
No, I would agree because I was actually still surprised because even though you talk about they rolled the coverage, they did that almost the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't roll it either quite fast enough or all the way enough to actually make Andy think twice about going ahead and making that throw. Webb can at least on occasion, he can handle guys one-on-one. I don't know if you would have put him on an island in that circumstance or not at that point of the game, but he can at least do it.
He'd be closer than our boy no Shucky.
I mean, he literally, like I said, you know, I try a lot of times when you're at games and you do the same thing. Occasionally, I'll focus on different areas of the field. But in that case, I was kind of writing on deadline, and when Andy dropped back, I just took a quick peek out of the corner of my eye, and I just saw AJ get. It felt like 10-yard separation initially between him and the wide receiver. I thought, oh, this is going to be an easy touchdown. And then it hung a little bit, and then came one of the better catches you're going
to
see.
Yeah, and he eventually, it's hard to debate whether the ball was he actually clipped it on at the end of his dive there, or if it was just a straight juggle. AJ
said it was tip, but the more I've watched the replay, I'm kind of debating
that. It doesn't look like
that
at all. I mean, it looks like he. But regardless, ball goes up in the air as it tends to do when AJ Green scores big touchdowns in Baltimore. If you remember last year's Hail Mary, and he runs. Jukes, I think Stewart's still twisting there at the 10-yard line, trying to figure out where AJ Green went.
And the best part is then the casual, like, last 5-yard kind of, I'm going to stroll in because I just absolutely beat you badly.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even, couldn't even touch the man.
Exactly.
Flag football score.
That's true, it was a flag football score.
So that ended up being the deciding throw and deciding score in the Bengals' victory, which... You know, you can overblow these things. In our section on Sunday, the game day section, I went through every year in the Marvin era and whether the team won or lost their first game and their end of the year average wins. They were nearly identical.
Right.
It really, people talk about setting tones and showing who you are, right? Baloney.
The NFL is just not that fluid.
Yeah.
It's really not. I mean, Paul Daugherty uses this term a lot. I mean, it is. It's an organic season. It just, at different times you're going to win games like that, and at different times you might lose a game that you had no business losing. The league is just not that cut and dried.
Yeah.
It's not like you're taking Elder and going up against Oak Hills, for goodness sake. Sorry, Oak Hills.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's just, Oak Hills, just under the bus for reason. Poor Oak Hills.
Sorry,
I'm sure they're fine, young. They probably listen to this podcast.
They do, and Elder rolled them, I think, in the opener a couple of weeks ago. That's why I kind of pulled it out of my butt right there. But it's not. I mean, the NFL games are never that clean. Yeah, you watch a Peyton Manning some nights, and it's so automatic, and I think it should make you appreciate how good Peyton is when he's that automatic. Games are just not that way. They're ugly. You know, weird stuff happens in NFL games. It doesn't come that easy. You know, Jacksonville, 17-0 leaders, lose by 17 after leading by 17. It's a weird league like that.
Yeah, it is. But that said, I thought this was an important win only for the fact that this team was 0-3 on the road in the North last year, and that was something that they needed to fix. I mean, and I think they set out to fix it with what moves that they made this off season. You know,
the other part too is as you project the season out, it's hard to do. We obviously did that. It does allow you then in a game where you are going to lay an egg that you just don't see coming for whatever reason. You're not giving yourself some cushion for that. If at the end of the year you have them losing to the Browns towards the end of the year, I didn't, but I can see that game happening. That gives you that maybe cushion that, hey, you stole one there. You know, you're not setting out to lose one, obviously, but it gives you that cushion when that happens because it's inevitably going to happen. That's why it was a big win to me.
Look back to last year's opener, a game that they absolutely gave away in Chicago.
Right.
How much would they have loved to
home
have
field.
That win because it would have given them the number 2 seed,
right,
and they would have advanced onto the divisional round and lost there instead. Yep. So, you know, you're not going to be waving any flags and trying to scalp Super Bowl tickets just yet. But it's a place
a
they
lot
haven't,
of good things, a
place they
of
haven't
good
won
things.
In 4 years, and it wasn't just that they won. I thought I was more impressed by the way in which it happened. With when you have Steve Smith's score and the place is going bonkers, and you're getting
and
down,
you haven't done much in your last
you
three
haven't
or four
done
series,
much in a while.
Yeah.
And then you have A.J. Green going up and down the sidelines, telling everybody just one play is going to turn us around. Let's go. We're going to make a play. He's going to make a play. I want to bring in Andrew Whitworth, because we talked to him. I talked to him after the game, and it was part of this conversation. It got into AJ Green and how out of character this was, but how much, you know, Hugh Jackson, the coaches, have been asking this of AJ. I remember the day after they lost in the playoffs last year, AJ Green sat there and said, one of the things the coaches told me was they wanted me to be more vocal, and I'm going to try to be more vocal, be more of a leader, and play with a little bit more passion and intensity. And you better believe Hugh Jackson had a huge smile talking about that. Anyway, so I want to bring in Whitworth talking about the scene before the big play and what AJ Green was doing. And he touches on a number of other subjects that are important that we'll get into. But here's some of Andrew Whitworth from after the game on Sunday.
Early in the game, if we just get some of those touchdowns, you know, it's a blowout, you know. And so, you know, really felt like offensively had a great game and just didn't quite score in the red zone. But then to answer the bell like that is something we haven't been able to do in the past on the road. And to be able to do it, like I said, this was a game that's going to be a great opportunity for us to take the next step, and we did it.
What about you? Do you think there will be a carryover? I mean, so often in the past you might have won a game like this and maybe dropped off. What is the potential for this to carry over and mean more than just today?
I mean, I think this team's just really talented, and it really means a lot. So, I mean, I don't see this team having many lulls, because I just think they were young and a lot of hungry guys. But the truth's going to be, how do we come out of this game? I mean, these AFC North battles, it's physical. It's, you know, how many guys are going to be healthy enough next Sunday to play? How many guys have this and that to deal with? I mean, that's going to be the part that's tough in this league. I mean, that's the one thing about the AFC North. We beat each other up so bad that getting to the next week is the biggest challenge sometimes. And so that'll be the next challenge for us coming up.
Does this mean more than any other way? You guys, it's always one game out of 16, but I mean, to come in here and do it, and to do it in the manner you guys did it, does it mean a little bit more than just one win?
Well, I mean, anytime you win a division game on the road, we've seen in this division, it's a big win. It's not really like winning two games, but it's similar. I mean, it's a big win, because it's hard to go on other teams' places in this division and win. And we've seen it. The years we've been able to win in Baltimore or win in Pittsburgh, you know, have usually led to us being in a really good place at the end of the season. So it's a big win. But the truth is, it doesn't matter if the next 15 aren't played the way they're supposed to be. So after tomorrow, we'll go to the drawing board and figure out the next opponent and get ready for that.
This team kind of take the hit you took on the big play, by the way, to come back and make a big play out of them. Say anything about you guys, you think? Say anything about this team's mental fortitude to come back and make a play?
Well, I mean, I think we've proven over and over this team's tough, and it's young and very talented. So, you know, it's about being able to respond to those kind of instances. And maybe over the last few years we haven't had as many as we'd like. We're really in a tough spot, and we make a huge play to win a game. But, you know, AJ had no doubt he was about to. You know, on the sideline right before he walked out there, he said it only takes one huge play to be back on top. And he did it.
You always said that?
Yep. He did.
Right before you guys went out there?
Right before we walked out there.
Yeah.
Did he say that often?
No. He walked up and down the sideline. I've never seen AJ talk during a game. And he walked up and down the sideline and told every single offensive guy, it only takes one big play to get this thing back the other way. And he did it.
Yeah. I usually don't see much emotion from him, but he was pretty fired up. He was flexing a little bit after the crowd. Did you see that out of AJ?
Yes. It's time for that. You know, it's time for him to play this game, not just to be great at it, but to, you know, for lack of a better word, just put his foot on the throat of people, because he can. He can. He's a special talent, and him playing with a passion is a lot of trouble for a lot of people.
I love Witt talking about how it is time for AJ Green to start being that guy. I mean, it's time for him to start being a leader.
I guess. And
playing with some passion.
I feel hot and cold on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think your personality is your personality. Now, that being said,
He has one. It's a little more reserved, but...
Yeah. I mean, if you're a fiery guy, that's just what you... I mean, that's just... people have different personalities, and I'm usually okay with that. But when a guy like that who hasn't done that much, if at all, does something like that, you guarantee that's going to get everybody to go, whoa, wait a minute, whoa, all right, let's go. I'm behind this guy. There used to be a friend of mine that coached the Cyclones years ago. Chuck Weber is his name. And Chuck, Chuck said, he said, I used to allow myself 4 blow-ups a year. That was it. He said, my personality's not that way. He said, but when I went crazy those 4 times a year, he said, normally guys responded, because I always pick my spots for that. If AJ does this every week, it's going to lose that feeling to it. But when it came in a clutch circumstance like that, and he does it again in week 11 and hasn't done it for 10 weeks, you darn well know people are going to go, oh, yeah, yeah, let's go right behind him again.
Yeah.
Pick your spots with it, and he did a good job. Well,
especially when he went out and then made the play.
Well, yeah, that's that. That helps add your credibility a little bit when you do that.
Yeah. So I want to, you know, kind of advance this a little bit and move it forward in the big picture of the season offensively here. What didn't we see from Hugh Jackson in this game? And I think we finally now – what we said before the game, we have no idea what we're going to see from Hugh Jackson.
I didn't see a drop kick. I didn't see a quick kick. I didn't see a triple reverse pass.
Yeah, no triple reverse pass, although I think they lined up for one.
Yes, they may have, yeah.
When you see – I just love the photo of Andre Smith and Andrew Whitworth in receiver positions
as
in the
slots.
Slot. It just looked awesome.
The world's two biggest slot receivers ever.
Throw it to him. I say throw it to him.
Well,
Let's get Andre Smith involved.
They technically aren't eligible in those circumstances, however. That's the one part. But it was interesting because I guarantee it's one of those things where he wanted to see, all right, what are they going to do with linebackers? Will they walk them all the way out? And then you go, okay, we're matched up 3-for-3 in the box. Now you're going to have to get off our three guys in the box blocking you. Ended up being a 7-yard Giovanni Bernard run on that play. So it was an effective play. I mean, you're not going to spring gadgety formations like that all the time, but maybe just because you see what they do and you decide you're not going to dictate where your linebacker, I'm going to dictate to you that you're going to have to at least put some people out there. Because then you're thinking, all right, is it going to be a bubble screen to the side over here and they've got the tackle already out there to block? I better walk a linebacker out. Wait a minute, maybe they're going to do that on the other side. I better walk a linebacker out. Well, then suddenly, guess what happens in the box? Not very many guys left in there, so it was interesting. He did a lot of cool things formation wise.
Yeah, it was the whole concept of. People will say, well, they didn't run the ball very well. All this short stuff to the outsides, working the flats, so many screens and end arounds. That was the way to attack Baltimore. What are you going to do? Run behind your rookie center at the two massive men in the middle, Haloti Ngata and their power. The weakness of the Ravens' defense is their old linebackers.
Right. Get them matched up.
So you want to get those guys having to run sideline to sideline all day and against your young athletes, and that's exactly what he did, and it's why they moved the ball in between the 20s. Now, they couldn't get it into the end zone, and that's another topic that we'll get into, but, you know, that was the game plan. Now, I want to go to Hugh Jackson here because – I got a chance to sit down with Hugh. It was myself, Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com, and Dave Lapham sat down with Hugh Jackson on Monday. And I think he gave very interesting perspective on what you can expect out of this offense going forward, and particularly in relation to the running game and all these things that we're talking about the variety of plays. He talks about Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, and people will say, what the heck? I thought you drafted this guy in the second round because you want to use him, and it was 57 snaps for Giovanni Bernard and 10 for Jeremy Hill. Jeremy Hill had 4 rushes for 19 yards. He really wasn't involved much at all. He talks about that and why that happened. It all ties together to the game plan we talked about. So here's Hugh Jackson. Here's a little bit of Hugh Jackson talking about some of the offense, not only Sunday, but going forward.
I mean, you guys used, I don't know how many formations were the same. there weren't many. I mean,
there wasn't many.
You made them all look, you at least made them all look different. Is that kind of the biggest thing behind your concept, is to always feel like they're always seeing something different?
Yeah, I think you want to keep the defense guessing. You kind of want to be in control. And I felt like we kind of had them in the first half that way. And then as things started to slow down a little bit, I think we didn't do some things as well as I think we can. So we'll go back to the drawing board and just keep hammering away at it and try to be the best us that we can be.
Are your personnel groups and formations like limitless or uncertain? I mean, how many of your abundance of personnel groups and formations that you've got did you utilize for this game?
Not all of them,
yeah.
You know, that. But at the end of the day, we'll do whatever we think it takes to win a football game, you know. And so, I mean, we were a little exotic in some things that we did because I thought we had to be. You know, I didn't want to go just downhill at these guys because I didn't think that was the best way to defeat them. You know, we just, as a staff, we kept watching. Not that we don't think our players can do it. We thought, what's going to give us a chance to keep them off balance, keep them guessing which direction we're coming from and where we're going to. And we thought yesterday's plan gave us that chance. Now, like I said, if we could do it a little bit more consistently, maybe convert in the scoring zone when we had those opportunities, maybe it's a whole entirely different game. But, you know, we won the game. I think that's the most important thing. And now we get ready for Atlanta.
I think you ran 15 double tight ends, I think, and you had to have more in than when Eifert went. I mean, how devastating was Eifert going down? How much did you have to rip up with Eifert going down?
We had to close the book on some things because we, you know, as you see, he started off, he had three catches, you know, early in the game. So we had quite a bit of things for him because we thought he was a matchup that we can exploit. And I think any time you have that kind of matchup that you can get things from, then it opens up everything else. Then AJ becomes even more of an opportunity because people then can't, you know, run safeties over the top or run people out at him. So, and Mostert. So it just, it was a little different. But at the end of the day, you know, again, our players responded and did what we felt we had to do to win.
Was that kind of how you envisioned the split with Gio and Jeremy yesterday, or did it? Did it get is one for whatever reason that game plan it better fit you?
Absolutely. To me, that game, that situation was the best thing. Gio is our starting tailback. Mm-hmm. But to me, in that first game, AFC North on the road in Baltimore, not that I don't have confidence in Jeremy yet, I just know what I'm getting from Gio every time I hand it to him. And so I didn't want to put the other young man in a tough situation, you know, where something, you know, could have happened, and then all of a sudden you look back and say, well, what did you do that for? You know, so I think he understood. I talked to him after the game, and I told him, I said, hey, you'll play more as we go forward. But first game, first situation, I think Gio will go back and tell you in Chicago game, he didn't play very much neither last year. You know, it's just the way it is. It's just the comfortability with the people you know, not that Jeremy hasn't earned the right, but I think as we move forward further along, he'll get those opportunities.
Is it going to be just a feel, or will it be game plan or feel or both?
No, it'll be more of a kind of game plan thing. I mean, I don't want to wear Gio out neither. I mean, he played quite a few snaps yesterday, but deservingly so. I think he was ready to go, and I think he was up to the challenge. But I think as we move along, we're going to need, you know, both our tailbacks. We'll need all three of our tailbacks to play well, and we'll continue to do so.
Skinny, let's dive into Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill, because in our prediction in our special section last week, which I hope everybody picked up, was on newsstands, I believe, wherever those
still,
are.
You can still find it online, I believe, in PDF format.
It is in PDF format. We went through the stats prediction of every stat, including attendance. And you want to talk about how much fun you had?
I actually did have fun with it. Once I finally got all the numbers to start matching up, I kind of played around and had a good time trying to figure out who was going to do what.
You were like,
I was in beast mode.
You were in beast mode. You looked like, I don't know, you were some sort of like crate accountant on a crack bender or something.
You should have said
I would look over because you really weren't using a calculator
scratch
all the
paper.
Time.
Always use scratch paper.
Love scratch paper and long division.
Yes, I don't ask me why.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
My youngest daughter literally threw my phone at me and said, it has a calculator on it, Dad. I said, yeah, but you know what? It bothers me.
You know what? You know what this is? Let's bring in my new music.
There it is.
Here's my new music.
It's time for Old Guy Message of the Day.
It's Richard Skinner Dates Himself moment of the podcast. We decided last week that it needed a little music, so I thought old timey. You drink some sarsaparilla while it plays underneath. I love
gut.
It.
I drink rot gut.
Yeah. Because it is. It's every at least once a podcast we do get skinny. And it only took. It didn't take you very long.
Long division, kids, is when you write it down on paper and you put the little line. Never mind. You just use the calculator. It'll be
so
better for you.
Skinny decided he wanted to do long division on one of the most labor intensive math projects in the history of the Cincinnati Enquirer. And hey, you killed it though. You killed it.
It was actually fun. But back to your original.
Oh yeah.
Point.
Oh yeah. So where we started was in that you had Jeremy Hill, or we had Jeremy Hill with actually more carries than Giovanni Bernard.
Not by many.
By the end of the year,
and a little bit more yards.
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gio obviously far more touches because of all his receptions. That obviously doesn't look like it could be the case after week one. But I think what you heard Hugh say is it's just a matter of first game, not a downhill running type of game. It's a spread them out, use speed, crazy environment, Baltimore. You just want somebody that you can trust in there. And he said, not that I don't trust Jeremy Hill, but I think that indicates that he doesn't really trust Jeremy Hill yet.
Not in the passing game.
And certainly not in your debut in that kind right. of an atmosphere. Give him a few runs, and that's fine. Get his feet wet. But now I think you will see – I went back last year, the opener in Chicago, Giovanni. I remember the early storyline last year was, when is Giovanni Bernard going to start getting more touches? He was in there 36% of the snaps compared to 64% for Ben Jarvis Grinnellis in that game. Well, by the end of the season, he had 135 more right. snaps than Benny, because as the year progressed, he got more and more and more. And I think that's the idea with Jeremy Hill, and you combine that with this not really being a game plan made for him, you get what you got.
See, here's what I think fans hear, and I think we sometimes hear this too. We hear Hugh Jackson wants to run the ball more. Never really said that. Said he wants to run it better. Mm-hmm. And the more you and I have talked to him, and all of us in the media have talked to him, the more he starts to tell you, hey, I just am going to do each week what we think it needs to be done to win that game. You may see Andy throw the ball 40-plus times in a game just because that's what the situation dictates, not because you're coming back. And you may see Andy, there may be a game this year he throws it 18 times in a game just because, A, they decided we can pound between the tackles, we've had success, we're going to keep doing it. I think he thought he had some certain matchups. One of them involved a guy, unfortunately, that got hurt that he could exploit. Honestly, the first quarter with Tyler Eifert in there, they did exploit it. He was going crazy, 3 catches for 37 yards. He got hurt, but then he still wanted to continue to say, all right, I got to spread the field out a little bit. He got Brandon Tate on some swing passes. Granted, he didn't exactly run the ball very well after he caught it, but he tried to get him in some space. He tried to get Sanu a couple times in space. He tried to get Geo a couple times in space. He ran a screen to Gresham. He was trying to dictate to them those terms, and I've got no problem with that. I think everybody gets wedded to what is your philosophy. It can be a lot of different things if that's the case.
And I think their identity will still end up being being a physical running team. I just don't think that was necessarily right. the case. I honestly think you'll see it next week against Atlanta. Atlanta gave about 5 yards per carry
right.
To the Saints on Sunday, and to be honest, came across as pretty soft up front last mm-hmm. year, and they're on, if anybody's watched Hard Knocks, has seen they've had a big push to prove that they're not soft anymore.
Because Brian Cox is going to kill somebody.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things where they got to go prove that, and I don't think that they proved that against New mm-hmm. Orleans, at least not defensively. This could be the game where you see come out a lot of Jeremy Hill and a whole lot of running the ball and taking on a little bit more of the Seattle-San Francisco mold that you're used to seeing. It's going to be one of those things where Hugh Jackson is not afraid to dip into a bag of tricks at any point in time if he thinks it can help him win a game. In this case, he felt like he needed to do it to keep them off balance, to keep them running side to side and wear them out. And guess what? At the end of the game, they needed to play. They were a little worn out, and he made a play. And I think it worked. I think you got to come away from this game saying, Hugh Jackson made it work.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they bogged down a couple times in the red zone. They bogged down on third down.
Yeah, they got to fix that.
And there's a lot of factors involved with that. One of them is you're missing your number two wide receiver. And then you lost arguably your second best receiver yeah. who was on the field in that particular game in Eifert. You're taking two of your three best receivers off the field. You don't think you're not going to struggle in the red zone, or you're not going to struggle on third downs?
Or really struggle in general. I mean, you look at what they had. They constructed a game plan to feature Tyler right. Eifert. They thought he was the best mismatch for them to take advantage of, and they did early and often.
Dude played three series. They had 110 yards, 5 first downs. He had 3 catches. The 7 series after that, before they threw the touchdown pass to
AJ Green,
they had 7 possessions. 7 series, rather, 10 first downs and 190 yards. You don't tell me that Eifert didn't make a difference?
Yeah. I mean, that was the one matchup where they felt like they could just own him. And
then eventually Baltimore was going to have to react to that, and then what might have happened elsewhere.
Yeah, you take that away midstream, and suddenly, well, there you go. You're stuck in a bit of a quandary. It's one thing that happens on a Wednesday, and you can plan for it, but when it happens midstream, well, now you've got to cut off a huge chunk of your playbook.
Well, we saw it in the red zone. As a matter of fact, the what led to, I want to say the third field goal. All those field goals run together after a while. But it was in the second quarter. Eifert was out of the game. You could see how they rolled the coverage to A.J. Green. They had the safety literally basically staring there saying, you're not coming this way. They ran Gresham out into kind of a little out route into the flat area. He kind of cut the route off and probably could have kept running. But you don't think that Tyler Eifert wouldn't have been there to kill somebody in that circumstance, running through some of that? It hurt them badly to not have him in that circumstance.
Yeah, no, I agree. And now, so we've got to talk about where Tyler Eifert's at health-wise.
Not good.
I mean, anybody that saw it knows it wasn't good. I mean, dislocated elbow. We have to assume they're not saying officially. It's
he's got
elbow.
A sling and a cast. I mean, and, that's a starting point.
And his arm was backwards.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's pretty clear dislocated. The question as far as how long it will be, we don't exactly know yet. We can guesstimate. You know, probably a standard dislocated elbow with no other real damage, maybe 3 to 5 weeks or something like that. But with these things, it's was there any ligament damage around it because of what happened? That we don't know. I saw Tyler Eifert coming in today. It looked like he had just come from getting his MRI or whatever he was getting done because they had all the stuff with him to go in. That was right about when we got in for Marvin Lewis's press conference. So I think they're just finding out as well today exactly.
Yeah,
the
Marvin really
damage.
didn't address it because I don't think he knew.
Yeah, I honestly don't think he knew when I asked him at all.
Tyler, I asked him if he would talk, and he declined, and I understand that. I mean, it's usually not a player's place to discuss the injury before it's been released. So
the most important element of this, I think, right now is the Bengals do have the IR designated to return tag available. Remember, a couple weeks back we talked about whether you would put Rex Burkhead on it or not if you thought he was going to be a while. And we said, well, this is the exact reason why you wouldn't, because you only get one and you want to have that available. So I think there's a good – depending on –
Now, there is a roster spot open just very quickly. They made a move today. They waived Montero McCaleb off the active roster and terminated – What even terminated the contract? They just terminated Kobe.
They terminated
Hamilton.
Him from the exempt list.
Yes, correct. So he's been terminated.
The practice squad, and he left. He showed up here with a trash bag and collected his shampoo and went home.
Exactly. So there is one roster spot available. There's been rumblings over the last week plus that that's going to go to Kevin Vickerson of the formerly of the Broncos.
Yeah,
but
that's probably likely. I would imagine
you almost have to bring another tight end in, don't you? I mean, I know they signed the green kid to the practice squad, but I just don't. If you want to run some two tight end stuff,
I don't know that they're going to go
find it.
They're not going to go find anybody that can do what Tyler Eifert can do.
No,
they're better off trying to get Ryan Hewitt more familiar with what Tyler Eifert can do, if
maybe.
Anything.
Or just say to heck with it, we're just a one tight
just
end
don't,
team
yeah,
right
I mean,
now, and
just,
that's it.
You just ditch a lot of the two tight ends.
And as you talk about, if you decide against Atlanta, you're going to line up and run downhill, and you're going to put Ryan
Alex
Hewitt,
Smith.
Or Ryan Hewitt as the H-back fullback spot, and line up Bernard and Jeremy Hill as the tailbacks, and just pound at him that way.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Smith is much more of a blocking tight end, so you can't do a lot of your passing stuff with him. But if you're going to power up and run it, you can do pretty well with him in the game if you want to do two tight end sets. So we'll see the extent of the damage, and then the Bengals will decide whether or not they want to put him on the IR designation return. Then he would have 8 weeks away, and then he could come back after that, which would put you a week.
And again, when you're talking 8 weeks, you're also subtract the game. It would be 7 games just because you're missing because you have a bye week mixed into that as well.
Right. So he essentially would basically miss half the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big blow.
Just brutal, just because of how good he was early in camp. Then shoulder issue, then came back and, again, 3 catches for 37 yards. If you do the math, that's a 12-catch game. I'm not.
We talked about the sophomore year bump with Tyler Eifert, and was it Lapp last week that said he thought or Dan that thought that Tyler Eifert would really have a big pop up this year? I mean, I think a lot of people believed in that, and they just took a big weapon away, and now you're back with Jermaine Gresham, you know, penalties, drops, the same roller coaster ride yesterday. He played fairly well.
He did play okay.
He played okay, but he had some bad moments. That's his MO.
I mean,
that's what you get there.
That's exactly right.
So they move on with that. So all right. So let's move. Let's talk defense a little bit. These guys were just dead, just absolutely dead tired. Well, you talked to Gilberry after the game, and it was. I mean, you. I'm surprised he wasn't just passed out in the locker room.
He was still not. Now, this was probably, 15, 20 minutes, literally from the point the game ended, maybe 15 minutes, but from the point the game ended to get in the locker room, thereabouts, because people shake hands on the field, et cetera, and there's a little cooling off period. He was still sweating like he was sitting in a sauna, sitting in that locker room. I walked up to him, and as he was answering questions, he was going, I can't catch my breath, man. I'm out of gas. And you knew he was. I mean, you could tell.
This is 15, 20 minutes after the game.
Yeah, right. Again, still sweating to beat the band, for goodness sakes. But, boy, I mean, to know how tired he was and to make those two last plays says a lot about Wallace. I mean, I can't say they lucked into him because they've done such a good job finding players, but you know, he was a career reserve.
I don't think they could have expected him to be as productive as he's been.
They were hoping he would be a guy that you could get 15, 20, 25 snaps maybe at the most in a rotation circumstance, just give your ends a blow. He's become a really good player.
He's a starter. Right. I mean, he deserves to be a starter, and he's been. If you talk about production per snap, I mean, he just continues to give it to you.
I'm at Paul 7.5 sacks, I think, last year.
Seven and a half sacks last year in a limited role. I mean,
right.
And the year before, I mean, he's been doing it for a while, and I mean, that was a big showing by him. That was, I mean, if it was Michael Johnson who did that,
you'd be going, ooh, wow.
People would be talking about how he's so great and deserved all that money, but because it's Wallace Gilberry and is a guy who was a cast off, nobody ever really gives him the respect that he deserves.
All I would invite you to do is see what he's done since he's been a Bengal.
Absolutely.
He's been very, very good.
And I've talked with Wallace before about this, and he talked about how much he hates the politics of the NFL, and that if you weren't a highly drafted, highly touted guy, that you're just forgotten and you're not worth anything and you're constantly disrespected. And he feels like he's constantly fighting that respect battle. And Marvin Lewis has talked a number of times about how Wallace demands that no one else will go out there as the starter because he wants to be, it's important to him because he feels like he's constantly disrespected by everybody else, and there's a status in going out there as being the starter and being the guy and making plays like he did.
And let's give some credit to what this organization has done, too. They have decided they don't care where you're drafted. Yeah, they want it. If they're taking you in the first round, they sure as heck hope you're going to play. But you see it. I mean, you got three undrafted guys at linebacker.
Yeah.
You got Wallace Gilberry, who, you're right, was kind of a cast-off, you know, picked him up because he was just a guy. I mean, even a George Iloka was a later round, middle to latest
round.
Yeah. Didn't matter to them. I mean, if you can make plays, and I think you and I talked to Duke Tobin about this a couple weeks ago, maybe even after we got done with Beyond the Stripes, we were just talking some football stuff. When you show guys that if you're undrafted or you're a cast-off or we picked you up and you make plays and then we decide we're going to play you, other guys start looking and going, man, that's where I want to go play if you're going to give me a chance. All I want is a chance.
That's why they seem to find those guys because, right. I mean, they just walk in the door and then they point them all to number 55's locker.
Yep.
And that's pretty much it. You don't really need to say anything else. I mean, that's kind of what this team stands for in a lot of ways. What did you think of Paul Gunther and his debut as defensive coordinator?
I thought he did a really good job. I thought the defense got tired. I mean, there's no question. We saw Vinny Ray on all fours at one point. He was out of gas. I mean, he only played 60-something snaps.
What a hilarious scene that was.
It was crazy.
I mean, because that last drive, I mean, the Bengals were on the field for 11 minutes and change of the 15 in that final quarter, and it was just play after play after play. And Vinny Ray is just on all fours right by the ball, in between plays, because he joked about it afterwards. Yeah, I just need to get a couple extra breaths, laughing, knowing that clearly you don't just get a couple extra breaths by just going to the all fours. I mean, you just don't see that.
Well, think about the adversity the defense faced. You lost Burfict to the concussion right before the half. Geno Atkins is not even close to where Geno Atkins, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. He just is not close to what Geno Atkins once was. It doesn't mean he's not going to get back there, but he's not even close to that part of it. You had Leon Hall have to take an IV bag, miss a couple series. You had Reggie Nelson get hurt on a hit where he hit Flacco as he was scrambling. Yeah. He had to come out. Sean Williams had to come in just for a couple plays.
Hunt was down for a while.
Yeah, Marcus Hunt went down. Lemire went down with cramp. I mean, you had a bunch of different issues in there. They were completely gassed. You can argue that, boy, you know, maybe the Ravens adjusted in the second half. I think, honestly, the Bengals simply got gassed in the second half was what it was. He blitzed a little bit more than Zim probably blitzed, but, you know, if that's your MO, that's what you want to do. And let's face it, the last sack of the game that clinched the game came on what?
A blitz. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know.
It was working. I mean, when he came out and firing on Flacco, bringing the house, it was forcing him into throws where he was just kind of lobbing it up or throwing, having to anticipate into traffic.
And he was not helping. I mean, he had some drops on him, so that's on the Ravens. They cost themselves with some drops, too. Let's be honest there.
Oh, I think the Ravens lost this game as much as the Bengals won it, too. I mean, they made a lot of mistakes.
No question.
I mean, their wide receivers were terrible, and Joe Flacco's decision right before halftime was unfathomable.
It's silly. I mean, he even called it the stupidest play he's ever made in football. He didn't understand why he did it. I mean, it was like an out-of-body experience.
Think about how much that really did cost them.
And I don't know if it was you, because you were sitting two seats down from me. Paul Doherty was next to me, and Coley Harvey from ESPN was on the other side. And I can't remember before that play last. It might have been Doc said, "You got to kick the field goal." I said, "Oh, it's a veteran quarterback. He'll get rid of the football." Mm-hmm. And as he stood there, Pat, I thought, oh my gosh, he's not going to get rid of the football. What in the world are you doing?
Yeah, so. just ridiculous. But think about how much that ended up costing Baltimore, because if they kicked that field goal, they would have not gone for two.
They would have kicked an
extra point. And they would have only been down three on that last drive, and they would have brought Justin Tucker in and sent it to overtime.
Would have gone to overtime. Correct.
I mean, it's just one just completely unbelievable decision, and that's the situation that you're in.
But back to your initial question, I thought Paul Gunther did a really good job. Again, especially when you're factoring in your two best guys on paper. Geno Atkins, an all-pro, isn't close to what he was, and you lost your best player on defense for a whole half. That's a factor.
Yeah. I mean, really, he only really gave up the one touchdown drive. Right. The other one was just where Adam Jones just...
It was a heave, yeah, and Adam admitted he made a coverage mistake.
He made a coverage mistake. That was on him. It wasn't on Gunther. I thought he did a good job of keeping Joe Flacco looking for ghosts,
yep.
you know, I
yep.
mean, all night long. So a lot of respect to Paulie G. I mean, you got to hand it to him. He had the plan and was aggressive and not afraid to put himself out there by being aggressive, because if that backfires, if you die by it, everybody would be talking about...
Yeah, why is he blitzing all the time?
Right. You'd be talking about the new coordinator getting burned on blitzes, but he did because he didn't think he would, and he knew he had the cover guys that could handle it. And for the most part, outside of the one play, he did. He did have the guys that made the plays when they needed to. So that was, you know, I do want to bring in Adam Jones real quick. Because Adam's just great. He touched on a few different things, his punt return, and also some of the conditioning of some of the guys, and his play where he screwed up. But you know, it's just always good hearing from Adam Jones, who was awesome on Beyond the Stripes last week. We had a blast. I hope. What a weird show that was.
I just can't believe it.
Ridiculous, absurd show.
When I was told that he could sing and liked to sing Country Roads, I almost didn't believe it. Right before the last segment, I said, "Man, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if we ask you, will you sing Country Roads?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll sing some of it." And then the whole bar starts singing it. It was fabulous.
Everybody did. Now, obviously, Adam is a West Virginia alum, so he's probably sung that many times. But he was not afraid to go ahead and wheel it out, and everybody started singing, and it took us out of the show. He rapped fairly terribly. on the show.
Don't ask the man to do freestyle.
Hey, the man said the poster boys are not getting back together because there's no money in the rap game. The poster boys were his old rap group that he was in, I guess. And so there was that. Doc sang the Bengals touchdown song.
The Bengal Growl.
The Bengal Growl.
One of my favorite songs of all time.
I mean, that was, you talk about, Doc's supposed to be the tough guy who's always playing he's Mr. Negativity, right? He just happily sung the entire fight song.
It's always worth coming to.
And it all just came out of nowhere. It was just absolutely absurd. Yeah, I highly recommend. We have Mike Nugent will be on the show Tuesday this week. If you're listening to this and it's already happened, then come next Tuesday where Jason DeMonch will be our guest. I'm excited. I love Jason DeMonch. People don't know much about him except for his scene from Hard Knocks when he made the team and called his mom and all that stuff. He is a hilarious guy and very outgoing and fun, and his story is really interesting. I mean, you talk about another one of these undrafted guys who came in and made a place for himself, and he constantly feels like he's fighting for a spot on the roster. Anyway, so come. That'll be at 7 o'clock every Tuesday. So those are our next two guests. Adam Jones.
Adam Jones. Yes.
I was
going to circle back around.
I knew there was a way. I knew there was a reason we started talking about this.
He had a pretty good game. 45-yard punt return.
Yeah.
A couple pass breakups.
He had one bad play.
And he admits it.
Yeah, he does admit it. So here's Adam Jones after the game.
Did you have a nice discussion with Steve Smith throughout the day?
I'm very cordial, you know. Like I said, he respect me, I respect him. We had one time where he hit me in my face, and I told him, like, "Hey, bro, let's go now. This ain't the one right here." But in the heat of the battle, man, things happen. I got a lot of respect for that guy. I think he had the same for me.
Yeah, we had kind words at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah. He was just telling me that he was proud of me for doing the things that I did, you know, as far as changing as a person. Me and Steve always been cool. When I came in the league, he kind of took me up under his wing when I was with Reebok. We did a lot of stuff together, but I got up more respect for him.
You had the punt return. Did you think it was going to be all the way?
I thought I was gone. I was just trying to slow it down because the kick wasn't that deep, and I was trying to get a wall time enough to set up over there. So No, it's the first week. I knew he wasn't going to kick it to me no more after that. And Darren did a good job. He said he's going to kick end over ends for the rest of the game. But we'll see how it goes, man. It's week one. Learn from this week. Got a victory and build on it next week.
You look like you were pretty thrilled to be one of the first guys to go congratulate AJ after he cut that long.
Hell yeah. I knew they weren't going to do nothing after that. You know, I got confident in our guys. And like I said, my eyes got bad on that one. When I seen him curl, I seen E-Man on him. So I was pushing the two when I should have just split it and started going the two. And, you know, things happen out there. But, you know, you learn from your mistakes. And I'd be better, way better on that play the next time it comes to me. But overall, I think we had a good week. I think we played pretty good in the back.
You guys were on the field a lot there in the second half. Was it getting pretty tiring out there for you guys, especially that last drive?
I ain't gonna say I wasn't tired, but I can tell some of the guys was tired. I think we got to do a little bit more conditioning for certain guys, but I've worked myself to be in shape as far as running extra, doing practice, doing little things so I can be all right.
So there's Adam. He's just entertaining, so I always like to bring him in. So, all right, let's move this forward a little bit. Atlanta comes to town this week, home opener. Our string of not having to travel much begins, which is fantastic after the weekend we just had. We've got to go to New England in early October, and that's
October.
Really the only trip
for a while
until the swing, the South swing.
Yeah, well, we've got the trip to Indy though, but that's just a car trip.
But I don't. So that's what I'm saying. I don't even count that. Yeah, that's basically a home game for us.
Yeah, exactly.
If we don't have to stay in a hotel and fly anywhere,
it's good. It's a win.
Then that's a home game for me. I don't care if I got to drive an hour and 15 minutes up to Indianapolis.
I'm with you.
I will do that. So that'll be nice because I think this weekend sent me into a bad place. I was about as sad as you could be, as sad a puppy as you could be on Saturday night because I missed out on the dinner.
The greatest crab dinner ever.
The Bengals press corps and everybody else that goes on these trips typically will go out. And in Baltimore, this place called Moe's Crab and Seafood Factory is renowned.
That's what they serve.
Crab and seafood, yeah. And it's the biggest trip of the year as far as the food, and the plane difficulties made me miss.
You at least got to Baltimore in time on Saturday night. We won't go back there.
All right, so we're back at home. Let's talk about the Bengals and the Falcons a little bit. Falcons, really, the whole schedule now looks a little bit tougher going forward.
It always is that way. We're all
the front end that we talked about so much now has a Falcons team that just beat New Orleans in a really, really hotly contested game. I mean, a really good game. A lot of good plays on both sides, and Matt Ryan looked unbelievable. 448 yards.
Matt Ryan is
three
in that. He's kind of
no
that
picks.
Andy Dalton tier of quarterbacks.
Oh, he's above Andy Dalton tier.
In that
oh,
tier.
Come on now, skinny.
He's not in that. Well, but he's not in the upper tier though, is he? He's in that next tier. See,
next tier.
But
Dalton's not in the next tier.
Maybe Andy's two yeah. tiers down. I got to figure out my tier. I got to figure out my tiering system.
You got to rework your tiers. I would say Ryan is in the second tier, and Dalton would be back in the third tier.
Probably.
I mean, I think Matt Ryan's on that edge of the top 10, in the round that top 10, I think.
And last year was just, they had a bunch of injuries.
They do have similarity. Yeah, they had a bad offensive line. Their offensive line was a mess last year, and they were soft. That's why they lost so many games.
And Julio Jones was hard. I mean, they had injuries that just were horrible.
And Matt Ryan suffers from a bit of the same Andy Dalton suffers.
Can't win in the playoffs.
Couldn't win in the playoffs. Now, they had the one win, which was the miracle win when Tony Gonzalez came and ended up coming back because of that, basically. But, you know, I mean, they had just consistently taken L's. It's very similar to the Bengals. They had a very talented, young team, up-and-coming team, a lot of skill players that are very good. But they would get to the playoffs and crap the bed. And I think you can draw a lot of similarities between these two franchises, in my opinion, at least in the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, and Mike Smith, I think, is a really good coach.
Yeah.
Again, they just – it happens. Last year's kind of a reset year for them.
That was the Bengals' 2010 year.
To some degree. To some degree. Now they've added another weapon offensively. You know, Julio Jones and Roddy White as a tandem are in that group that you go, that's one of the three, four, or five best tandem wide receiver groups in the NFL. Harry Douglas has always been a really good third, four slot guy.
Yeah.
And then you add Devin Hester now.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable.
It literally, and I always laugh when fans see all these weapons and go, well, they can't cover them all. In this case, maybe you can't. I mean, who do you try to single out of that group?
They're going to need all their corners this weekend, and I think with the move of McCaleb,
I'm guessing Denard comes back.
That probably means they believe Denard is going to be back. So you're going to see Darquez. Denard will more than likely make his debut. You'll have all five of your corners, and you're going to need all five of
your
corners.
Yes, you are.
Devin Hester was great as a receiver. I mean, it makes you wonder why
he hasn't been. 5 for 99, 6 for 99,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder, and he looked good doing it.
5 for 99.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why maybe people haven't been doing, should have been doing this with him a long time ago, and they get him as a returner, which, as everybody knows, is very dangerous. You know, I think this is one that they win. Of course, you and me both picked him to lose last week, so
yep. And we both picked him to win this week.
We both picked him to win this week. So what do you really know? But they have really made, outside of the playoff game, they have really showed that they are a much better team at home. And I think coming home after that big win, I think there's some carryover from that.
I think there is. I'm just, on that. Just losing a weapon in Eifert because you're already down a weapon in Marvin Jones. Perfect, we won't know until Wednesday or Thursday, and you may not even know until Sunday because of the way the concussion protocol is handled. We saw it with Andre Smith in the preseason. He seemed okay during the week, but then the independent doctor the day of the game said, nah, can't go. I know Burfict will try to fight through that, but again, you're talking about it. This is out of team's hands. That's the thing that you need to know with these concussions anymore. This is out of team's hands. The last word is somebody else, and somebody else, to their credit, you know, may say, yeah, I just don't think the guy can go. You're down those two guys. Gino is still fighting his way back, and I don't know if he tweaked a knee on Sunday or not. I know they're calling it dehydration, but I need to see him out there to believe that he's okay.
Yeah,
it's a lot. I still think the Bengals are again, logic dictates them being at home that they should be fine, but you're not going to win automatically because you're just at home.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that. But I think this is a team that they can physically push around.
And maybe that's the best way. And I hate the cliche of keep the other team off the field, but that's a way to keep Matt Ryan's possessions limited is hold on to the football. Your defense is going to be out there. If they're going to be running around trying to cover these guys all day, and you only got five corners to begin with, you want them gassed constantly. Maybe this is the game plan that just says, let's line up and see if they can stop us from running the football.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way that they'll go about it. Of course, who really knows, but I think this is an exciting game. I love the Falcons coming
in here. I do too. They're fun team to watch.
They're a fun team to watch, and you get guys like Green and Jones all out there going against each other. I just think it's going to be a fun chess match to see how Paul Gunther handles it when you've got a real offense to deal with. This isn't the Fighting Flaccos. Okay, I mean, this is a serious offense, and how will he handle it, and will they be able to get enough pressure on Matt Ryan? So anyway, check out all our coverage during the week. We'll delve much deeper into this game on Cincinnati.com and the paper and be on the stripes and everywhere else that we have. God, we do so many damn things.
But it's good though.
It is good. It's great. I love the diversity. But any way that you are interested in consuming information,
we've got it. We've got multiple platforms. We've got a TV show, or at least a broadcast show.
We have a broadcast.
We have a podcast.
We have a podcast.
We have tons of coverage online that sometimes online is just special for online only and
in
print.
We have straight bloggy stuff.
Yep.
And we also have this newspaper thing that people still read
occasionally.
They do. God love them. So we appreciate that. We got to do a quick update of the fantasy.
Yes, we do.
We got to do our fantasy watch because we had the first week of our fantasy matchup, and Skinny took me behind the woodshed.
Well, it is funny. I did, and I'm going to give the score in a second.
We got to tell people in case they forgot. We're doing this game against each other with just Bengals players that we drafted in an earlier podcast.
Five offense, because five defense.
Because we wanted to give people a chance to hear us talk about fantasy because we know you guys love your fantasy teams and gives you some perspective on Bengals, how they're playing, if you expect more, who we would pick up, this, that, or the other. So we're doing it in 4 week segments as an aggregate. So I've got 3 weeks to try and catch up, but I'm behind.
Yes.
It went really poorly.
Yeah, we did not take a quarterback obviously because there's only one. We did not take a kicker because there's only one. we had to start at least one running back, two wide receivers, and two flexes. Is that correct? Am I doing that correct?
One running back, one wide receiver, and everybody else is whatever.
That's what it was. Okay. And on defense, it was five of any players. Yeah. You got points for tackles, tackles for loss, sacks, interceptions, pass breakups, forced fumbles. So to make a long story short, I ended up beating Paul this week 61-43. I had that league because it is going to be an aggregate total.
It's unfortunate.
And I didn't realize I got really 13 points out of that A.J. Ewing touchdown pass.
Just off the one play.
So it was closer than you think. It would have been 48-43 without that. So not bad. Your top offensive player was Gio Bernard. He got you 11 points. You got nothing.
20 touches. 20 touches for Gio. I mean,
but it came at the detriment of your other back, Jeremy Hill, who got 1 point for
you. Yeah,
that
is unfortunate as well.
You got three from Tyler Eifert, unfortunately, before he got hurt. And then Brian Hewitt, who you have.
I have the all-injured skill player team. I have Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert now.
Now, sadly, we can replace these players after 4 weeks, but we're stuck with them for these first 4 weeks. I have Benjarvis Green-Ellis. I needed a running back. Didn't work out so good for me.
How many carries did he have on Sunday?
As many as I did. A.J. Green got me 19. Mohamed Sanu got me 6. Jermaine Gresham got me a point, and I have Dane Sands and Bosco.
Does Jermaine Gresham's fantasy value go up?
It does. Well,
it has to a little bit.
It can't go down.
I mean, it has to at least a little bit, especially if you're talking about a significant amount of time.
Now, you had two really good defensive performances. Wallace Gilberry got you 12 points. Very good. Emmanuel Lemieux, thanks to the interception, and he actually had a pass breakup as well. He got you 11.5 points. He was actually the Bengals'
leading
tackler. Emmanuel
Lemieux played 87 snaps.
Yes, he was all over the place.
Out of the 88.
11 tackles, a team high. So you
How
got,
about this other random nugget while I'm talking about that? Two people played every snap, all 88 snaps for the Bengals. One was George Iloka. The other one, 36-year-old Terrence Newman. How about that? That guy is a freak.
And my defense got a little more balanced than yours. I had actually you had three guys combined for 4.5 points for you, and two other guys combined for 23.5. I had 12 out of perfect in a half of football, mind you. That's a lot of points in one half of football. Got 8 from Adam Jones, 8 from Terrence Newman, 5.5 from Carlos Dunlap, and 1.5 from George Iloka. So 61-43 is the lead for me.
Is the lead for you, but I feel okay. The Giovanni Bernard touches hit the perfect amount that we've been talking about. I projected, people asked me this. I mean, I must have got this question 8 million times this offseason. How many touches, blah, blah, blah. I said 13 to 15 carries, 5 to 7 receptions.
Exactly
a game
right.
is kind of – and that's where they landed here in this game. I think they will run the ball more going forward, period, and most of those will go to Hill. But I think that
he's on your team.
I need that too. Yeah, so but what I think you saw Sunday is what you're going to see out of Giovanni Bernard most of the year as far as touches go.
Yep.
I mean, that's how they want to use him. Getting him out in space, letting him run around, throwing him the ball, getting him out there in the slot. They took him all the way out to the edge a couple times. I think you'll see plenty of that. But, yeah, this is rather sad that I have a deficit that I have to overcome. But that's okay. And my two biggest receiver playmakers are completely out, just screwed for the first
that's
segment.
That's what you are. You're hurting there.
I'm hurting badly. I'm hurting badly.
But I could lose my best defender, Vontaze Burfict, if he doesn't play this
Sunday. Here's what I need. I need the Bengals to decide that this is going to be their running game, and they are going to run it 65 times and pass it 4 times.
Green goes 5 for 60 and a touch, and Sanu goes 5 for 60 and a touch. I'm good for that.
It's fairly sad how this has developed. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be doing the – did we ever decide what exactly it was going to be?
No, but we'll come – yes, we did. Yeah, for the first segment, we're going to sing each other's fight songs. Yeah.
I think we should get to pick what song – not fight song. I think we pick any song that –
It's because you're losing in it. You don't want to sing the
Kentucky
fight song.
Well, I don't mind – I'll sing a fight song, but I'll let you pick one of your old timey favorite songs.
I may do that,
and I'll do like a chorus or something. We don't need to
tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. I can see you singing that.
Do we need to bring back the old timey piano?
Yeah, no, I'll pass. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring up Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Tony Orlando and Dawn just made an appearance. All right, well, we got to get out of here. So appreciate you listening, of course. Every Tuesday, the podcast posts as through the rest of the season and also into the off season. So you can always expect that. We'll have review of the Atlanta game, and we'll look forward to Tennessee, who's coming to town after that. The Fighting
Lockers.
Tennessee won. There's the next four. The next four opponents. Three of the four of them won. The other one,
New England.
Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Yeah, in New England. That's
yeah.
All.
So it does. It definitely is a little bit harder than they maybe thought it was going to be on Saturday. But anyway, we'll have our coverage of that. Again, thank you, JoeSpato.com, yep, for sponsoring the podcast. We love having you guys.
Get
on
the Bengals
board.
App.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to get the Bengals app.
It'll give you alerts when stories or news is breaking. You got to have it.
Yeah, and all the news, everything we do is on there. So if you always say, well, I don't know what, you have this video here, stuff gets buried. If you have the app, boom, it's all there for you on the go, including videos, tweets, anything you can imagine. Anyway, that's enough. We're selling it like it's a 86 Tercel.
Speaking of 86, we may go back there in the archives. We're not quite to 86.
Not
we're
quite
go out,
86.
We're going to go out with a now, song.
Well, here, because Atlanta's coming to town.
Yep. The right? Dirty Birds.
The Dirty Birds. So we got to go back to Atlanta. Who would you associate with Atlanta anymore than MC Hammer?
MC Hammer and Deion Sanders back in the day.
Or by the time this song actually came out, he was just Hammer.
Yes, he was Hammer.
The Funky Headhunter, I think, when he tried to be tough. Yeah. Oh, you trying to do the hand signals? I can do the hand signals. Too legit to quit. So let's do it. Too legit to quit. The Bengals, I guess, you could say, were too legit to quit.
On Sunday, they were absolutely too legit to quit.
Pushed to the edge. They refused to quit, and they ended up winning. So it's just a perfect combination of songs, and I love the woman who's back.
Hey.
So here we go. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you, MC Hammer. I hustle for my muscle, and you look good too. Yeah, I'm going for all that I can get. Kicking at the top because I'm too legit to quit saying. Too legit to quit. It's a shame I gotta do it, but I remain the same. Unchained, getting better, never known as a sweater. Keeping it at the top because I got myself together. So roll with a guy who's physical and fit, knows the time, and too legit to quit saying. Too legit.